Chapter 34. Walked out of it, a dread and awful personage. But there was one little trait in her behavior which I liked to dwell on, and which gave me some faint shadow of encouragement. I could not forget how my mother had thought that she felt her touch her pretty hair with no ungentle hand. And though it might have been altogether my mother's fancy, and might have had no foundation whatever in fact, I made a little picture, out of it, of my terrible and relenting towards the girlish beauty, that I recollected so well, and loved so much, which softened the whole narrative. It is very possible, that it had been in my mind a long time, and had gradually engendered my determination. As I did not even know where Miss Betsy lived, I wrote a long letter to Peggotty, and asked her, incidentally, if she remembered, pretending that I had heard of such a lady living at a certain place I named at random, and had a curiosity to know if it were the same. In the course of that letter, I told Peggotty that I had a particular occasion for half a guinea, and that if she could lend me that sum until I could repay it, I should be very much obliged to her, and would tell her afterwards what I had wanted it for. Peggotty's answer soon arrived, and was, as usual, full of affectionate devotion. She enclosed the half guinea. I was afraid she must have had a world of trouble to get it out of Mr. Barkis's box, and told me that Miss Betsy lived near Dover, but whether at Dover itself, at Hythe, Sandgate, or Folkestone, she could not say. One of our men, however, informing me on my asking him about these places, that they were all close together, I deemed this enough for my object, and resolved to set out at the end of that week. Being a very honest little creature, and unwilling to disgrace the memory I was going to leave behind me at Murdstone and Grinby's, I considered myself bound to remain until Saturday night, and, as I had been paid a week's wages in advance, when I first came there, not to present myself in the counting house at the usual hour, to receive my stipend. For this express reason, I had borrowed the half guinea, that I might not be without a fund for my traveling expenses. Accordingly, when the Saturday night came, and we were all waiting in the warehouse to be paid, and Tip the carman, who always took precedence, went in first to draw his money, I shook Mick Walker by the hand, asked him, when it came to his turn to be paid, to say to Mr. Quinion that I had gone to move my box to Tips, and, bidding a last good night to Mealy Piatto's, ran away. My box was at my old lodging, over the water, and I had written a direction for it on the back of one of our address cards, that we nailed on the casks. Master David, to be left till called for, at the coach office, Dover. Apostrophe this I had in my pocket ready to put on the box, after I should have got it out of the house, and as I went towards my lodging, I looked about me for someone who would help me to carry it to the booking office. There was a long-legged young man with a very little empty donkey cart, standing near the obelisk, in the Blackfriars Road, whose eye I caught as I was going by, and who, addressing me as Sixpenneth of Bad Halfpence, apostrophe hoped I should know Imogen to swear to in allusion, I have no doubt, to my staring at him. I stopped to assure him that I had not done so in bad manners, but uncertain whether he might or might not like a job. What job? ? Said the long-legged young man. To move a box, ? I answered. What box? ? Said the long-legged young man. I told him mine, which was down that street there, and which I wanted him to take to the Dover coach office for sixpence. Done with you for a tanner. ? Said the long-legged young man, and directly got upon his cart, which was nothing but a large wooden tray on wheels, and rattled away at such a rate, that it was as much as I could do to keep pace with the donkey. There was a defiant manner about this young man, and particularly about the way in which he chewed straw as he spoke to me, that I did not much like. As the bargain was made, however, I took him upstairs to the room I was leaving, and we brought the box down, and put it on his cart. Now, I was unwilling to put the direction card on there, lest any of my landlord's family should fathom what I was doing, and detain me. So I said to the young man, that I would be glad, if he would stop for a minute, when he came to the dead wall of the King's Bench Prison. The words were no sooner out of my mouth, than he rattled away as if he, my box, the cart, and the donkey, were all equally mad. And I was quite out of breath with running and calling after him, when I caught him at the place appointed. Being much flushed and excited, I tumbled my half-guinea out of my pocket in pulling the card out. I put it in my mouth for safety, and though my hands trembled a good deal, had just tied the card on very much to my satisfaction, when I felt myself violently chucked under the chin by the long-legged young man, and saw my half-guinea fly out of my mouth into his hand. What? ... said the young man, seizing me by my jacket collar, with a frightful grin. This is a Paulus case, is it? You're a going to bolt, are you? Come to the Paulus, you young woman, come to the Paulus. ... You give me my money back, if you please, ... said I, very much frightened. And leave me alone. ... Come to the Paulus. ... said the young man. You shall prove it yourn to the Paulus. ... Give me my box and money, will you? ... I cried, bursting into tears. The young man still replied, come to the Paulus. ... And was dragging me against the donkey in a violent manner, as if there were any affinity between that animal and a magistrate, when he changed his mind, jumped into the cart, sat upon my box, and, exclaiming that he would drive to the Paulus straight, rattled away harder than ever. I ran after him as fast as I could, but I had no breath to call out with, and should not have dared to call out now, if I had. I narrowly escaped being run over, 20 times at least, in half a mile. Now I lost him, now I saw him, now I lost him, now I was cut at with a whip, now shouted at, now down in the mud, now up again, now running into somebody's arms, now running headlong at a post. At length, confused by fright and heat, and doubting whether half London might not by this time be turning out for my apprehension, I left the young man to go where he would with my box and money, and, panting and crying, but never stopping, faced about for Greenwich, which I had understood was on the Dover Road. Taking very little more out of the world, towards the retreat of my aunt, Miss Betsy, than I had brought into it, on the night when my arrival gave her so much umbrage. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.